Okay, scififorme.com. We are talking to Kevin J. Anderson, who is the co-author of the brand new Winds of Dune with Brian Herbert, who is the son of Dune creator Frank Herbert. And we're talking on the phone with Kevin. Thank you very much for taking the time to talk with us today.
Yes, the book signing is all day long, every day, so this is another break for me. I'm always happy to talk to you. It's been almost like a month since the last time we talked.
Yes, we got to spend some time together in Omaha, and that was a good opportunity for us, and we appreciate your time up there. How did San Diego go?
San Diego was like Woodstock for geeks. It's like this army of comic fans and science fiction fans, and I've gone many times. I go almost every single year, but it seems to be getting more overwhelming year by year. And I don't think Brian has ever been anything like that. He was just kind of dazed for a lot of it. But we had quite a few talks and presentations and autographings, and we were just blown away. I think we probably signed thousands of books, and our presentations were standing room only. So we just got this overwhelming support from all the fans, and that was certainly a good way to keep our energy up.
Now, a lot of people, San Diego Comic-Con started out as a comic book-focused event, and I've been hearing some criticisms lately about how Hollywood seems to have taken over that thing, and it's just gotten so gargantuan, almost too big for itself. Is that much ado about nothing?
Well, the foundation for the complaints is really that there's just not enough room for everything. And I think if there were 10 times as many hotels and 10 times as much convention floor space, everybody would love all the stuff that's there. And but the fact of the matter is that the convention center, which is one of the largest convention centers in the world, is literally packed wall to wall for as many halls as they can possibly have open. The memberships were sold out months before the doors opened. Hotel rooms sold out in like 45 minutes. So, I mean, we had, in past years, Rebecca, my wife and I, would wait until like 10 a.m. in the morning when they supposedly opened up for the hotels, and we would both be on two separate phones apiece, and we'd both be online, and we're just frantically trying to get any kind of room. And when you have to deal with those kind of difficulties just to get into the con, it tarnishes the enjoyment of it, because it's such a madhouse. But as far as the Hollywood taking over and stuff, I don't know that that's necessarily a downside, because when you see the booths and the exhibits, that's what the fans want to come and see. It's not that they don't want to do the comic book stuff, but there was a section that was just devoted for showing, I don't know, I think it was like previews of the new Twilight movie, and there was a presentation with 20 minutes or half an hour of Iron Man 2 that they were showing. People waited outside in the hot sun for 4 hours. I'm not kidding, 4 hours in line to get in to see this thing. And so if there's that kind of excitement and that kind of dedication, you really can't say they should get rid of this stuff. And obviously, the customers want it, so there really needs to be some way to just make the thing 10 times bigger than it is, because there's got to be room for everybody.
Now, talking about movie adaptations, has there been any discussion, has anybody come to you and talk about, because we've got a lot of the animated pieces that Warner Premiere is putting out that are adaptations of the graphic novels, the Superman, Batman series of books. Has there been any talk with you about adapting Last Days of Krypton or Enemies and Allies for one of the animated movies?
They hadn't talked to me just yet, although they were doing a Batman and Superman Public Enemies animated movie, and they flew me out to L.A. to be filmed for a day, because there's an interview with me on some of the edit material of the DVD. They haven't talked about adapting my novel yet, but the other ones were, they started out as comics, so I guess it's easier to make a film when you've got a storyboard right in front of you. But just keep in mind that all of these things are entirely owned by DC, so even if I'm the person who wrote The Last Days of Krypton or Enemies and Allies, that doesn't mean I'm the first person to know if you're going to do anything with it.
Okay, let's talk about Winds of Dune. How did you get involved in collaborating with Frank Herbert's son, Brian, in continuing the series?
Well, Frank Herbert wrote 16 novels in his original series, and his last one, Chapter House Doom, just ends on a cliffhanger. He was building up to carrying his characters forward. He left them on this, in these dire circumstances, and then he passed away in 1986. So it was pretty clear that he was going to write at least another book in the series, probably even more, because he continued to write the two books. And after I had established myself as a fairly successful science fiction writer, and since Frank's son Brian had also established himself as a successful writer, and in fact the last novel that Frank Herbert wrote was a collaboration with Brian, I approached Brian when we were talking about doing some other, maybe some Dune short stories for an anthology, but it had always been bugging me as a fan that I wanted to know how the story ended, because it was clear that there was so much more to be done with it. And we started talking, and Brian and I just really hit it off instantly. Within just a couple of minutes, we were finishing each other's sentences, and we were almost talking a different language, because I knew all of Frank Herbert's stuff, Brian knew all of Frank Herbert's stuff. And so we decided to carry on the legacy that his father had left. And even before his death, Frank Herbert had talked with Brian about the two of them collaborating on telling the story of the Butlerian Jihad, which was a trilogy that Brian and I later wrote. So Brian views it as sort of an honoring his father's memory and homage to the work that he did, but also this is carrying on and it's shining a new light on this great science fiction universe that I'm hoping that every one of your listeners has read the original novel, dude, because it's just science fiction. What Lord of the Rings was to fantasy, it's just this foundational work.
Now, when you and Brian were talking, I guess it would seem a natural fit for the two of you to work together. How much work did you have to do to convince the publishers that you guys were the ones to keep telling the Dune stories?
Well, Brian, of course, was Herbert Estate had obviously picked him. He was the son of Frank Herbert, and he had already written with Frank Herbert, so he was obviously the person who was in charge of all that. But for the two of us, it was mainly just the energy that we had together and really diving into this intricate science fiction universe. But we wrote up a proposal for the first trilogy, House Atreides, House Harkonnen, and House Torino. And our proposal had to be in great detail, because as our agent described to us, that we had to convince the publishers that we could do a real Dune book. I mean, the first book, they could just put the label on it and people would buy it, but they wouldn't buy any other ones if they didn't like what they read. And so we had to really convince everybody in the New York publishing houses that we had the right stuff. And so 140 pages of very detailed descriptions, chapter by chapter, of characters and plot lines. And the people in New York could read that and to see what they were going to get. Now, we got some people who were skeptical, and what's funny is the publisher that has published all but the first three of our books, four books, they were skeptical. Tom Doherty had known and worked with Frank Herbert, and he just didn't think that anybody could pull it off. But when Brian and I published House Atreides, the same guy, Tom Doherty, called our agent immediately and said, "I don't care what it takes, but I want any other Dune books that these guys want to write, because they really captured Dune." And that's what the publisher said, and that's what a lot of the fans have said. And since our every one of the books has been an international bestseller, it seems like they are running away. It seems like they're getting what they're looking for.
One thing that I noticed, especially in the first Dune book, is the language that Frank used when describing the events, especially describing the environment. I was struck by how much water-themed descriptions he used for the desert and for the canyons and, you know, the sand-related stuff. Did you guys feel a sense of obligation to maintain that same voice that Frank used in the original books, or did you, you know, maybe we have to do it in the first book and then can we go in different directions for the rest of it? What were your thoughts on that?
Before we started writing anything, we really utterly and completely immersed ourselves in the Dune universe, and never immersed into your water language again. So we really immersed ourselves in the Dune universe and how Frank Herbert wrote, how he described things, how he plotted his books, how he used his many layers of politics and ecology and religion and economy and all kinds of things. But when Brian and I started working on these books, we were already both well established as writers on our own. Brian had a dozen or so books published, and I don't know why, like maybe 30 books published. So at that point, it really did not seem like it was a good idea to try to imitate the way Frank Herbert wrote. But we tried to be sure that we captured the look and feel, that we remained true to the core of what made him such a popular thing. And that's always been our goal. So it's up to the readers to decide whether we pulled it off or not.
You were working off of Frank Herbert's notes, is that right? Or are all of these completely original?
Yeah, Frank Herbert had actually written an outline for his grand finale, that what he was calling Dune 7, and that's the one that we wrote as a two-volume thing called Hunters of Dune and Sandworms of Dune. But we also found a couple thousand pages of Frank Herbert's notes of character descriptions and historical backgrounds in the Dune universe, and chapters that he had written for his Dune books that he never used, or those opening quotes called epigraphs that are in front of his chapter that he had written a bunch of those but didn't publish them. So we had a lot of this material and ingredients to work with, and like I said, Hunters and Sandworms are very closely inspired by Frank Herbert's outline. Some of the Valyrian Jihad trilogy was based on the history that Frank Herbert laid out. Some parts of the characters and even a couple of the scenes themselves in the House trilogy were all written by Frank Herbert. But, by now, The Winds of Dune is our 11th book, and it is the direct sequel to Dune Messiah. It picks up right after the end of Dune Messiah. And from there, we've extrapolated mainly from what we knew in Frank Herbert's notes, but what Frank Herbert left at the end of Dune Messiah, and get to connect the dots between that and the very changed situation at the beginning of Children of Dune. So there's a 9-year gap there that we were able to tell a sweeping epic story in.
When you see the miniseries that Sci-Fi Channel did that they called Children of Dune, which was basically a melding of Children of Dune and Dune Messiah, is that... What do you think of adaptations like that, where they take such a large amount of material and just condense it down into just the bare bones of two different stories? Did that miniseries work for you at all as a Herbert aficionado, or did that hurt the series at all?
Well, the Children of Dune miniseries was 6 hours long, and effectively the first 2 hours was Dune Messiah, and then 4 hours was Children of Dune. Dune Messiah itself is a book. It's a very short book, and so I think a 2-hour movie of that story was probably adequate, and then 4 hours for the Children of Dune part of it. But you have to remember that these books are so well loved by the audience that there really is no way that whether it's David Lynch or whether it's the Sci-Fi Channel or whether it's the new Paramount movie, it's not going to match everybody's expectations of Dune. And people have their own preconceptions, their own ideas
you mentioned the Paramount adaptation. I'm assuming that they plan to adapt more than just the first book. Has there been any talks about adapting the books that you and Brian have written, or just staying with the originals that, that Frank Herbert wrote?
Well, right now what they're doing is just trying to do a remake of the original. They're trying to do, now that, that Peter Jackson has done The Lord of the Rings, he's sort of raised the bar for Hollywood so they can all see, yes, it can be done. So now finally, we hope that there's going to be a version that's a classical interpretation, that it's a movie that will really feel like it'll be really true to the original novel. And if that does well enough, then obviously they have plenty of other books to do, whether they want to go back to do the prequels that we wrote, or whether they want to pick up The Messiah after that. That's still way too early to tell that, because we've got to get the first one made.
Take me through the process, if you would, on how you and Brian collaborate on one of these things. You're working off of original notes, and then what else happens? Somebody comes up with an idea, you guys just kick around a lot of brainstorming on the story. What are your steps involved in figuring out which story you're going to tell next?
Well, for The Winds of Doom, for example, that is the sequel to Doom Messiah, so we know where Doom Messiah ends, and we know where Children of Doom starts 9 years later, and we felt that there was so much of the story that could be told that we wanted to build a bridge between those books. And so Brian and I, we've been talking about ideas for years. We've been working together for a dozen years now. We've written 2 million words together. So we don't just talk about the one book that we're working on. We'll have ideas for the next project as we possibly go out. But we get together. I used to meet at his house in Seattle, and we'll just sit there for a couple of days and bounce ideas around and brainstorm and just let the plot go and the characters and decide how we want to structure the story. And then we'll, by the end of that meeting, we'll have a pretty decent outline sketched out, and then we'll flush out the outline in fairly good detail, maybe as long as 70 pages long or so. And I think Winds of Doom is about 100 chapters long, so we split those up. I'll do 50 of them, and Ryan will do 50 of them. And yeah, he picks the chapters that he's most interested in, or the ones that play most to his strengths, and then I pick the same one at the same time. I mean, the things that I like to do best, and Brian and I each know I'm better at this and he's better at that, and we then go and write our individual chapters, edit them, and pass the computer files back and forth until the whole thing has been polished again and again and again, and when it gets published, it's been probably 10 to 13 times.
When you're doing that and you're writing your chapters while he's writing his, how much, I know you've got the notes for the outline, but when you go through and then you start combining the chapters and putting it all together, how much do you have to revise and change in order to fit what the other has written?
Well, we try to take care of that when we're doing the plotting phase. We spend great deal of time just talking through the book chapter by chapter so that each of us has a very clear idea in our minds of how the chapter should be and where it's going. And we keep in touch with each other by phone or letter or whatever while we're writing, so that if one of us changes something or has another idea, that we can both factor it into the writing process. But the end result is that we've really got the same idea for the book in our head, the same blueprint in front of us, and so we're like two general contractors both constructing this thing according to a blueprint, and we check each other's work.
So what's next in the series?
Well, Brian and I have two more Doom books that are under contract. One is The Throne of Doom, which is the second half of this story after The Winds of Doom, that will carry 3 years all the way up to the beginning of Children of Doom. It talks about a great rebellion that Shaddam the Fourth has been defeated and exiled at the end of Dune. He comes back and tries to take the throne for his own again after he's been defeated. And then we have one more book called Leto of Dune, which will be the first century or so
take for you guys to knock one of these out from start to finish?
Well, they come out every year. So far, 11 of these books have come out 11 years in a row. And we work on other projects, too, but it generally takes a calendar year from start to finish, although we're working on the different projects, so it's not start to finish that we need to work on. We are on tour right now. It's a 16-city tour that we're doing for The Winds of Dune. And if they go to dunenovels.com, our website, and there's a full-blown schedule for the tour, so maybe some of your listeners will be able to stop by one of our signings. There's also, I'm doing a regular blog on the daily routine of the tour, and that's on the Dune Novels site, too. So if you go there, just look for my blog. It's there. And you can see what it's like doing the aftermath of writing a book. It's not just the writing process. It's running around and doing interviews and talking to people and meeting the fans and signing their books.
Which part of that do you enjoy the most?
I kind of like being off in the mountains by myself dictating chapters. That's the creative and quiet and peaceful part. But it's still really great to be able to meet the fans face-to-face and shake their hands and just talk with them about the things that they love. We have people coming up with photos of when they met Frank Herbert and other stories that we love to hear from them, too. So it's all exciting. Right now we're doing the social and public part of it. When I'm done with that, I'm probably going to want to go off and stay in a mountain cabin for a little while.
Do you ever get feedback from fans that you end up incorporating into the stories? Like somebody will say, well, why don't you guys try this? And it kicks off a brainstorming session that actually leads to something that gets put into a book?
Why did I talk so much? And there were times, I think when we were, I can't remember which book it was that we were on tour for, but we started brainstorming some pieces for Hunters of Dune, and that ended up being in there. That was maybe sparked by a question from the audience, or Brian and I were giving a talk, but there were so many discussions and so many brainstorming sessions over the course of getting a book finished that by the time it's done, it's really hard to trace back this particular thing came from this particular conversation. But we listen to the fans and we get a lot of feedback from them, and we try to get the best ideas wherever we can, but obviously the ideas have to be primarily our own and from Frank Herbert's background.
Okay, and fans can check out the tour at dunenovels.com. They can always read the blog that Kevin is writing about his experiences here on the tour. And you can check out Winds of Dune that is now in bookstores worldwide. Kevin J. Anderson, thank you very much for your time today. We hope you enjoy the rest of your time promoting the book and your time after that relaxing from it.
Great. Thank you very much for having me on the show.
All right. We appreciate your time.
Okay.